Residents of one working-class neighborhood in Charlestown, Indiana, are fighting a legal battle to keep the city from replacing it with an upscale development. Pleasant Ridge, which sits virtually in the center of Charlestown, is home to roughly 1,000 of the city's 9,000 inhabitants. The neighborhood is mostly prefabricated duplexes built to serve as housing for workers at a nearby munitions plant. It is one of the cheapest places in the city to live. A little over half of the neighborhood is rental housing. Things began to change last year with the opening of the Lewis and Clark Bridge, which crosses the Ohio River to Louisville, as well as an influx of new employers. The longtime mayor, Bob Hall, saw a new future for Charlestown as a posh bedroom community for professionals working in Louisville. This was reflected in his re-election campaign, as well as city documents. But that future doesn't include a neighborhood of run-down World War II-era housing. With private developer Nice Ventures ready to turn the neighborhood into a multi-use subdivision, the mayor and the city council approved a redevelopment plan in November. I spoke with Josh Craven, a resident of Pleasant Ridge and a member of the Neighborhood Association. Here, he describes the city's use of code enforcement to begin pushing landlords into selling their properties.
They have a citywide rental inspection program where they inspect rental properties, but the qualifications for to have your home inspected are your house has to be at least 60 years old, it has to have originally been built on a not on a solid foundation, and it had to have been originally built with what is deemed today as hazardous materials, and our homes are the only ones in Charlestown that meet all three of those qualifications.
Fines were issued for ripped screens, gutters, moss growth, missing lattices under porches, and other related violations. The fines increased every day the issues weren't fixed, but the city also passed a resolution allowing the council to demand fines even after repairs were made. The city offered to waive fines if a house was demolished or sold to the developer for a third of the market value. The fines added up fast, often into the thousands of dollars within days. Most landlords who owned rental properties quickly took the offer. When discussing the Neighborhood Association's experience at a city council meeting, Craven referenced an ordinance that actually allowed the city to pre-screen and silence anyone from Pleasant Ridge who wanted to speak at the meeting. You can hear the incredulity in my voice when I ask him to elaborate.
3 days in advance, and then they approve it.
Really? You can't comment at city council meetings unless you sign up in advance and they approve it?
Yes. Like city council meetings are on Monday, so you have to have it in by Thursday at 5 o'clock, and then they'll approve it to be put on the agenda. If they don't like what you're up there to talk about, or if it's controversial or something of that nature, they have the power to just say, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to put you on the agenda to talk.
I looked up the resolution, and it turned out to be exactly what Josh Craven described. The resolution even specified that council members had a right to speak at meetings, but public comment was a privilege granted at the discretion of the council. The mayor and the rest of the city council have also gone out of their way to paint Pleasant Ridge as a hotspot of crime and drug use to justify the redevelopment. They say 50% of the city's 911 calls come from that area. But Craven disagreed, pointing out that the proportion of calls is meaningless without actual numbers.
And I mean, they always use the crime, and I'll go back to that. I mean, they always use the crime as an issue, but they say 50% of the police calls come to our neighborhood. I dispute that a little bit. I may say 30 to 40, but even at that, I mean, 30 to 40% of what's the actual number, though? They'll never give us the actual number. So what is it, 30 to 40% of 10, or is it 30 to 40% of 100? They won't never give us that number, so then therefore, as long as you're making it sound like the percentage is high, then it makes us look bad. But the actual number, if you got 10 police calls, and we got four of them, I mean, is four police calls for 1,000 people, is that really that bad?
The Neighborhood Association has enlisted the help of the Institute for Justice, a nonprofit, libertarian-leaning law firm to bring their case against the city. I spoke with lead attorney Jeff Rose, and he says the city is operating in blatant violation of the state's unsafe building law. That law contains fairly robust protections against the seizure of private property for the purpose of turning it over to a developer.
The city of Charlestown is using code enforcement, ticketing, in order to force people to sell their property to a private developer. That violates the unsafe building law. The unsafe building law makes it clear that you can't do what Charlestown is doing, and that is assessing gigantic fines immediately and having fines accumulate every day.
Some of these fines have topped six figures on houses with a current market value of less than $30,000. Altogether, the neighborhood likely has millions of dollars in outstanding fines. Most landlords saw those fines and bolted, selling off their property to the developers almost immediately. But, according to Rose and the Institute's filing, collection of the fines was deferred because the developer planned to demolish those properties. In the meantime, tenants continue to live in houses that were deemed dangerous enough to merit massive fines before the developer bought them. He says this is just one of several constitutional violations at work in this case.
The city is violating not only its own ordinances and Indiana state law, the city is violating multiple provisions of both the Indiana and federal constitutions. So, for example, there is evidence that the city is targeting the neighborhood and association for code enforcement because it has been opposing the city politically. That's a First Amendment violation. The city has been conducting unconstitutional searches, which violates the Fourth Amendment. The city has imposed these massive fines for trivial problems with property, and that actually violates the Eighth Amendment's provision against excessive fines. That's a little obscure. People aren't used to hearing about that, but that's going on. The city is also violating equal protection. It's treating the developer differently in the neighborhood than it's treating regular homeowners. And last, the city is violating due process by using code enforcement as a way to get around Indiana's good eminent domain law, which protects property owners from this kind of mass redevelopment.
It's worth pointing out that the use of code citations to clear residents out of Pleasant Ridge isn't Mayor Hall's first attempt. In 2014, he sought to use an urban blight grant to demolish the neighborhood, but was eventually blocked in that effort. Rose also mentioned that the residents of Pleasant Ridge actually did manage to elect one of their own to the city council, Tina Barnes. But Rose claims that she was marginalized on the council and unable to affect council business. I was not able to speak with Barnes herself to elaborate on that claim. The Institute for Justice is hoping to use this case to establish a precedent. They say circumvention of eminent domain protections is a national trend.
The reason why the Institute for Justice took on this case to represent the homeowners is that we're afraid that this will become the model across the country for getting rid of low-income people, effectively seizing their property and transferring it to a private developer. In 2006, the state of Indiana reformed its eminent domain law and made it very, very difficult to seize the property of low-income people to transfer it to a developer. And what the mayor and the developer have done here is implement a scheme to get around that. And so we need to stop it here, not just to protect our clients in the Pleasant Ridge neighborhood, but to make sure that this doesn't become the nationwide model for avoiding good eminent domain reform.
Attorney Mike Gillenwater, who is representing the city in the case, spoke with me at length about issues with the neighborhood. From the city's perspective, they're trying to renew a blighted neighborhood full of homes that are 60 years past their projected lifespan. He also pointed out that the city's inspection program only applies to rental properties and that no action has been taken against homeowners. He also said the city has several programs to assist residents in finding new housing, including a program called Pathway to Home Ownership. When asked about the city's legal argument in the case, he said only that the city was exercising its right to enforce building codes. I followed up with Josh Craven about the question of what the city would do with owner-occupied homes, since the development cannot move forward without the entire neighborhood. He agreed that no action has been taken against homeowners, but believed the city would eventually start levying fines against them. As for the pathway to home ownership, He said only two of the roughly 30 applicants even qualified for the program. Special thanks to the Louisville Courier-Journal for their continuing coverage of this story. For WFHB, I'm Jared Dill.